This is a production of Cornell University.
Student Assembly Meeting, March 31st, 2011.
The time is 4:45, and I'm calling the March 31st, 2011 Student Assembly Meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
You got the comfort for it?
Yeah, we do. Yes, we do.
Just not on that side.
Late. Unexcused.
Hey, Anchor, can you just sit on that side and even it out a little bit?
Danger's late.
Can I get in on this?
Here.
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 Late. Excuse or unexcuse?
He's excused.
Excuse. Here.
Here.
He's late. Excuse.
I'm saving it here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you close the three of the doors? Or you want to
Can
you close three of the doors?
Just a guard's not late. He's on top. Yeah. Sorry about that.
All right. Moving on to approval of the minutes. March 17th, 2011. Those were sent out, right? Did we send those out?
Did I send those out?
No, I didn't send those out. I'll be forwarding those out. I think I received them, but I didn't forward them out of the entire listserv. I'll send those out, and we'll approve them next week. So holding off on that. Open microphone. Do I do it? Anyone in the audience ask that?
Is there anyone in the audience who wants to say something that's currently on the agenda? That said, closing of open microphone session.
Yes, Chauncey.
This has absolutely nothing to do with the meeting, but kind of like
advertising. I encourage you to post that on the blog then, now that you made it. Moving on to announcements and reports. Slope Day Programming Board report. Deacon Nicoletti.
Okay, met with the Slope Day Programming Board on Monday, the Appropriations Committee. A few things. First, they got an increase in $3 per student in the last byline funding cycle, and we were happy that the vast majority of that increase went to funding talent and the artists. In addition, we were appreciative of their move towards more sustainability and, you know, looking at our decision to take back the tap, and we would encourage them to continue doing that. In addition, they also asked for a lot more feedback from the student body this year, and we appreciate that, and, you know, we're just really pleased with them, and we feel like they're spending money efficiently. Questions? I think that's actually me again.
All right. Moving on to special project requests. Vicky Nicoletti.
We also heard a special project request from the Cornell International Affairs Conference event hosted by CAIAS, and we rejected the funding, the requested a special project of $1,200, mainly because we felt it wouldn't reach enough Cornell students. In addition, engagement for SA members wasn't where we wanted to see it, and we felt that the group could do better to reach out to funding boards that are set up for this purpose. And you know, we don't want to, again, continue the precedent that the FA is a funding board. We like to fund events that more directly relate to our mission. So this event is actually going on now. So ask Encore about it. It should be a lot of fun, right? That's all.
So those who are arriving late, make sure to check in with the clerk. All right, faculty panel on mental health update. I'm going to postpone that since we do have a resolution to talking directly about that, and we'll discuss that more later. Moving on to Resolution 71, SAFC Special Projects Funding Assistance. This came around kind of last minute, but not kind of last minute either. So we have been discussing about this over the past few days. Can you take this to the table? Moving on to Resolution 71. Welcome. Go ahead and state your name and your position just for the record.
So my name is Rahul Kishore. I am a junior at College of Arts and Sciences, and I'm Vice President of Public Relations for the Student Assembly Finance Commission.
I'm Kristen Jenkins. I'm a sophomore in Iowa, and I'm VP Internal Relations.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, so first, referring to the documents that you received, one is the SAFC Allocation of Appeals, which is four semesters back of all the SAFC information. And so you can kind of see the situation. We're in the spring of 2011, and we're going to be talking mainly about the Special Projects and Appeals Fund, which you see there. In addition, we have the SA budget for your reference to see how much is in the reserve account. So I can start talking about the situation from the beginning. So basically, the SAFC sets up a Special Projects and Appeals Fund. Normally, they put in approximately $50,000, and that funds appeals to the SA and appeals to the SAFC for SAFC appeals, which is what we got through at the end of, or right before break. And any appeals that get overturned come out of that fund. So right before we went off on break, the SA had in totality funded $26,423 in appeals. The SAFC realized that it made an error on $9,656 in appeals, which is...
Can I just interrupt you really quickly? He's referring to the sheet here at the top. All the numbers that anybody is enumerating are spring 2011.
Right. So a total of $36,079 were overturned in appeals. And as you can see, kind of relative to the past few semesters, that's a significant amount more than has ever been overturned in appeals. And, you know, that's mainly due to the fact that more groups were appealing, and the groups that were appealed had higher amounts that they were appealing for. So you can see fall 2010, 19 appeals, spring 2010, which is the semester before, 14, and then the semester before, 6. So 6, 14, 19, 35. So that's kind of, you know, some of the causes for what has happened. So if you look at the map here, Special Projects and Appeals, we took out, or out of this account came the hangovers payment, which kind of happened at the beginning of this semester. In addition, a higher than normal appeals amount left very little money for Special Projects. Special Projects, once appeals are all figured out and taken out of the account, SAFC Special Projects are then funded until the account goes to zero normally. SAFC Special Projects are, you're eligible if you, A, had a change in circumstances, so let's say that you're the rugby club and you made the finals that you didn't know about, that's a change in circumstances, you're eligible to apply. Or if you only got admin funding, like let's say that you accidentally screwed up, you're able to kind of get, you know, quote unquote, second chance by applying to Special Projects. As of March 11th, $13,360 in Special Projects were approved. Normally, and you can see in the past again, a lot of organizations do rely on Special Projects, and there's normally a sufficient amount of funding in this Special Projects and Appeals account. But due to the high amount of appeals, there is no more money left. So, basically, the SA, as per Resolution 71, would agree to make a short-term loan to the SAFC for $9,000, and I can talk about why it's different than the number presented there. But essentially, out of its reserve account, which is right here, so there's currently $14,609.15 in the reserve account, the SA would give a loan to the SAFC for $9,000, and that loan would be paid back by July 1st, 2011, when the SAFC reverts all of its money. So essentially, normally, there's at least $100,000 that isn't used by student organizations that are allocated money. So the SAFC allocates money, the student organizations have it. If they don't use it, it comes back to the SAFC. And so that's, those are the funds that the SAFC would pay the SA back. So essentially, this is a liquidity problem. The SA is just giving them short-term funds, and then the SAFC will have those funds afterwards and be able to pay us back in full. And so that would leave, if we made this loan for the rest of this semester or 6 weeks, $5,609 for the next 6 weeks. So, you know, through this, obviously, you know, I don't know if you guys kind of want to talk about this, but supporting student programming is a priority for this body. There is extremely low, if not zero, default risk for the SAFC, and there are no special projects that should go over $5,600 or $5,600 in the next 6 weeks. But can you guys, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Sure. Absolutely. So based upon the calculations that we've already made, we were able to approve, as Adam McLeay already said, about $13,000 to $14,000 worth of special projects. We specifically had a cutoff date this year because we knew we were running out of money of March 11th. There are several special projects beyond that date that were simply not considered because of lack of money. The actual amount of money that we would need to fund all the projects up to March 11th would be $10,803, which is higher than the amount currently in the resolution. I would move to amend the number that's currently in there to that number so we can fund all those groups. $10,803.50. Yeah. Effectively, if you look at the number of groups that applied this year, special projects often is an opportunity for groups who simply made a mistake and had no opportunity to basically get recourse through the typical appeals process to at least get one category. That's one of the biggest ways that special projects is used. And in this year in particular, due to a change in the publications guideline section of the SAFC guidelines, several groups made a mistake. And we found that many publications are using special projects as an opportunity to actually get funding to actually make their publication even happen. As such, we feel that it's a necessity for us to get this type of money, and we can guarantee you that towards the end of the semester, when we start to see how much groups are actually spending, we'll be able to pay you back in full.
So I guess just to wrap it up, when VP Nicoletti and I originally proposed this to the SAFC, it was kind of on the heels of an argument of, where should this funding come from? This money definitely needs to come. I guess a quick rationale for that, for those of you guys who aren't as familiar with the SAFC process, there are some groups that have to go through special projects and couldn't even have applied in the regular budget. An example of that is club sports, mainly because they don't know, I think club rugby is an example of one that's currently in the pile. They don't know when their tournaments are going to happen. A lot of club sports teams have enrollment in tournaments contingent on whether or not they make it that far. So we're not even giving money to groups that screwed up the first time and are trying to make a second attempt. Some of these groups are applying for money for the first time and have had these requests sitting on there since late February. So I try and keep that in mind when you do vote on this resolution.
Move to vote on the amendment from 9,000 from changing the total amount of 9,000 to now amending 10,803.56.
Please find it friendly if you want to do that.
Find it friendly. Is there any dissent to that on the assembly on the part of the discussion? Seeing none, the amendment is approved. Now we'll vote on the assembly.
This is a zero interest loan.
We'll cut you guys off for the 56.
The motion is a full
resolution.
You're going to go then to a flat. So, you are in favor of resolution 71.
Basically, Ivy Council has moved from being committee on the student assembly to an independent student group. However, since the policy liaison from every school has to be well versed in what's going on with student government, because the reports go to the administration as well as the assembly and members of the student body, we're trying to make sure that our policy liaison is directly elected. That way we can also continue to keep that relationship with us and whatever assemblies are going on. I know there are a lot of other delegations that are having problems keeping a good tie between their particular student government. So the main change is just that instead of directly appointing a head delegate, directly appointing a policy liaison, they'll be versed in what's going on with student government. They have voting rights as well, and they'll also be introduced to everybody else and to become a member of the Ivy Council. That's the way it goes.
All right, so just to clarify, we are voting on a bylaw change. Since the bylaw is going to require a majority of seated members on the SA, so we need at least 12 yes votes. We have nobody on the team. Is it half or check there?
I'm going to call the question and in a second, I mean,
consent. And I will call for act. Well, we need to move the recording of the motion. This is my last announcement.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And when are internals taking place?
A week from Saturday.
Okay, good. That's perfect.
All right. Will the clerk please call the roll on my motion?
Yes.
Yes.
Before I begin, I have pretty much nailed down the date. It will be during a student assembly meeting, so I'd like to make an amendment instead of on April X and Y, on April 21st, or on Thursday, April 21st, at 4:30 p.m. in the Willard Strait Hall Memorial Room. And you know, if you find that friendly, I'll move on. Okay, I'll just we'll do that later. Okay, so a constitutional convention. The point of this is to, because when we talk about a student bill of rights, it's such a grand idea that I feel like the process needs to be just as, you know, democratic as what a bill of rights represents. And in order to pull this off, I want the process to be educated and informed. And I also wanted to include as many outside members of both the undergraduate and graduate communities as we can get in here. So what this calls for is when we have a student bill of rights, we'll start off with a document, just like we would start off a resolution with a document. And then we would break up into, well, we'd have a panel of administrators. So I already have confirmations from the university ombudsman or associate ombudsman who will be able to attend. I have meetings with the judicial administrator and so on, as well as a panel that will include faculty who have great institutional knowledge of the university, who could put this idea into context in terms of student rights throughout the 60s and the 70s and different movements throughout Cornell, how we got to this point. And then we also have faculty who are lawyers who can help us when we break out and start amending the document with outsiders, so that we come up with strong policy language at the end that's coherent, that has some basis, and that, you know, we come up with a truly informed document. That's the purpose. And what this document will do, you know, the overarching purpose of a student bill of rights is because too often we blindly accept what we perceive may be intrusions upon our liberties. You know, whether it be a resident advisor searching a room without cause, whether it be a faculty member berating a student about their political views, whether it be even in this assembly, a student assembly member coming out with a resolution to take the Cornell name off of a publication. And we've all seen, you know, student groups and been through that, you know, the removal of a leader because of his sexual orientation and different situations such as that. A Bill of Rights
could help educate students and be guiding, and it could be more than the campus code, which is a big document. It could just be the broad strokes of what your rights are as a student at Cornell. And if we make this an informed process, a democratic process, then we will come out with a good document that I believe the administration could get behind. And the whole point of this is to go at it from a very collaborative standpoint with all the university, the Graduate Student Assembly, and us, as well as faculty, administrators, and as many outside students as we can muster, so that we come up with something we could all agree on. And I'm sure you have a lot of questions. I know I've been talking about this all day, and people have lots of questions. So I guess I'll leave it at that.
So I definitely, I definitely love the idea of including as many voices as possible in something like this. I think this is really broad. We may even want to include something to include members of the administration to make sure that there's administrative buy-in.
Right. And I could tell you, I mean, it doesn't have to be in this resolution because I have already confirmed administrators who are willing to be in attendance.
Okay, good. I think this is a really good idea. I think it's about time that this campus has some sort of guiding document to let students know what rights they have on campus. I think one more thing I can recommend for developing the resolution a little bit more is explaining how it will be staffed. Because it says that all student assembly members will serve as delegates to the convention along with community members, graduate professional students. Is that anyone who attends?
Precisely, as long as they're a Cornell student.
Okay. Then I'm just worried that it may get unwieldy or that, like, interest groups will just flood the... Is that a worry?
It's not a worry because at the end I don't expect to have the same document that will be presented to the student assembly. That this will be more of a tool to get as much input as we can, which is why I'm here to encourage all of you 3 weeks ahead of time to go back to your student groups and talk to them, send them this document, ask them what they think, get input, see if they could come to this event and participate as a delegate. That way we will have the best process.
Okay, so just to make sure I'm getting this right, what this convention will produce is a recommendation with as many voices as possible to the student assembly for how we should think about
it. Right, and nor will it be the conclusion of the input we seek to get on this resolution. After the convention, you know, I plan to get all the net IDs I can at this thing and continue this thing online if people have more input as we proceed and come up with something with finality.
I really like the idea of having this convention to have a bunch of different students come talk about it. I was emailing different universities or the other Ivy League to figure out if they had civil rights and we can try to get out of the discussion of the people that I've emailed so far. There was a lot of discussion about that one because a lot of people didn't like it. For the original goal was proposed, it was eventually passed, but I really like the discussion of really getting to it. So I'm really all for it, just to see what the rest of the student body has to do.
Yeah, and on a side note to that, you know, some universities like Princeton have something they call a Student Bill of Rights, but many universities have at least a page or a website of rights or responsibilities in an informal way. So this would be similar to that. It would be used as both an education tool, and if we choose to adopt some rights that aren't already enforced by existing university policies, that could be a big political discussion whether or not we want to push for those things.
Uh-huh.
It's funny because I did get a similar comment yesterday at the university assembly meeting, online at least. And my response was that that the campus code is really, if you want to know your responsibilities, if you want to know thoroughly all the rules and regulations, that is one of the main sources, and you could search through tons and tons of pages. What this is meant to be is more of something to create the awareness of your rights. And I want to keep it simplistic in that sense. I feel like this is something we badly need, and to go into it will reference other policies within it, and you know, keeping it as rights is the best way to move forward and engage at this point. But it's a good, I mean, suggestion.
The idea that this generates groups following membership. Do you want to present this to you before April 21st or present them before April 21st?
Yeah, don't even hesitate, honestly, because the original document will serve to frame the discussion of the convention.
Okay.
So if you guys want to shape the debate, I suggest you talk to me beforehand and talk to your group members. Now, if it's an issue that you want to overhaul, like the section on privacy or something like that, then I'll say, listen, let's wait till the debate, because that's what the convention is going to be all about, if you want to present that as a resolution. Yeah, and that is the crux of the enforcement piece of this document. Are we just doing this like any other resolution, or is this going to be an enduring policy document? And I would obviously prefer the latter. And the way we could go about doing that, and what I'm working on, is with the policy office, we're going to go through this initial document, and we are going to footnote as much as we can in terms of things that we think this document covers that are mentioned in other official university policies. So that way, the discussion and the debate will be framed around those things that aren't. Say, for example, the section on privacy about searches and searching people's rooms. Currently, there's no policy like that in existence. So that's where the debate will lie. And if there come out of the convention sections of this Bill of Rights, you know, the Bill of Rights is supposed to be broad strokes, but if there come out sections that really aren't backed up and enforced by any other university policies, then we will look at finding venues to alter those policies so that this Bill of Rights is in conformity with them, so that everybody's on the same page. So, for example, there's an article about academic freedom. Well, I would want to consult and have this Bill of Rights in concert. If no present academic freedom policy exists, I would want this to be in concert with those policies that are more on a lower level of abstraction.
So you expect the convention to be more of a brainstorming, this is what we would hope to have, and or in our purview, right?
Right.
Or what I was thinking was that you would be going through and saying, okay, where are all the different things and putting them together in terms of the... So it's more of a, you want to come up with a document and then see if it's covered rather than...
No, well, the latest draft, I mean, I'm sending you drafts, I'm going to be sending you more drafts, but before the convention, that draft will be have footnotes. So you will know which things are not currently covered by university policy. And I mean, so I guess you could say the goals are twofold. Number one, we want a document in the end that will educate students. And number two, we want to see if there are holes in our policies that students would want to have filled, and in that mission we are representing the student body and their voice.
Hi,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The second last article entitled Amendments is there so that the SA, GPSA, UA would all have to agree on an amendment, which means that, you know, whatever final thing we have would have to be thought out, because that's going to be a drawn out process to both ratify and amend. Well, obviously, everything will get sent to the president, we'll get feedback, and so maybe the first round won't even pan out the way we'd hope. I mean, the plan is to have as much collaboration as possible so there are no surprises. However, it could be possible that we ask for something that the administration would like to see differently. So in that case, we'd have to, you know, go back to the drawing board like all of the things we do. It certainly draws its influence from multiple universities that I have looked at, and it's unique in its own right, but at the same time, we're not reinventing the wheel by any means. The main purpose is that, you know, I don't know if you know this, but even though we do get tons of money from state universities, state government, federal government, we are still a private university, and in that sense, like any corporation, we are not entitled to the Bill of Rights in the Constitution of the United States, unlike any adult citizens at a public university. So that's another reason why we should have our own student Bill of Rights, because the normal Bill of Rights simply can't apply to us. Well, I did point out the privacy debate that I'm sure will occur. There's nothing of Cornell policy that says that a resident advisor can't search your room without cause. Now, that's in the Constitution of the United States, but as I said before, this is not a public university, so we are not covered by that. So that will certainly be a point of debate. And there are others. Unfortunately, this is not the latest version, so I cannot tell you all the parts that aren't covered yet, but certainly that will be pointed out before the debate occurs. However, I can say that, you know, part of this, a decent part of it, is new ground. So that's going to be the exciting part.
So I guess that as a follow-up question, it would be, you know, once the new Bill of Rights is created, voted on, would that mean that the administration, that they would be at all likely to accepting this and changing the campus voted on?
Well, the plan is to have as much collaboration as possible, and what we would do afterward is identify those areas where we thought the students really want us to push for these rights that don't exist anywhere else. And after we identify them, we're going to work with the policy office to identify the best ways to go about changing those lower level of abstraction type policies, like the campus code of conduct, some section of that. You know, find out where a good change would be made, discover policy language for that, and so that resolutions will be thought up of in concert with this Bill of Rights, so that it's all coherent, that all the policies, because as I said, a Bill of Rights is broad strokes that could refer to a million different policies. Now, if we plan on getting something that doesn't exist anymore, it's important that we also look at those policies that we may be affecting, and that will be part of the post-convention, you know, work.
So I have two questions. One, I know you alluded to it in your comments as well as your response to questions thus far, but could you kind of further outline what the procedure needs to come to the convention? Like, what are the steps that students need to take? Like, how is it going?
All right. It's important to note that this is still a work in progress, and I look forward to the executive board meeting on Monday, and I encourage anyone who wants to get involved with setting up with this event to come to that executive board meeting, because I hope that, you know, as this says, if we pass this resolution, the student assembly is putting its name on this. We are sponsoring this. So I want to make sure that, you know, as many members who want to be involved, and certainly the executive board, to help hammer out those details and logistics. My first instinct is that we'll have you know, some sort of introduction, a couple minutes from those panel team, panel members, talk about history and to set up the event, to have groups and breakout sessions and, you know, a lot of laptops present so that we could work on, you know, working with these faculty to make coherent amendments. And that seems to be the basic process, but as we get further and further, we'll start hammering out the every 15 minutes what we're doing.
And then the second question was on the bridges off of but what kind of enforcement mechanism are you thinking for? Is it going to be part of the Constitution, Bill of Rights, or is it going to be a separate document that has an enforcement mechanism? If an administrator or RA or someone has to violate one of the bills, one of the rights, one of the bills in the bill, how do you, what punishment or what enforcement mechanism?
Right. Well, this, I mean, the enforcement mechanism is the biggest question, and what I was saying before is that if we are breaking new ground, a lot of this won't be. A lot of this will be just a simple way for you to see what your rights are as a student of Cornell University, which in and of itself is a very important thing. The parts that aren't, the parts that are reaching for something that doesn't exist, that will be worked out through perhaps a university assembly resolution that would alter the campus code, and that would be in concert with this Bill of Rights. So when we get to that point, it will be about making this thing in concert with other policies, because this is not meant to be a real administrative law type document like the campus code is, but this is meant to paint out those broad strokes that can be referenced in more detail. Well, my ambitious agenda at heart is to get as much input as possible. So for that to happen, no, it won't be one SA meeting. We'll take it online. We'll take it to clubs. We'll keep on going with it. I do not expect us to pass a resolution calling for the president's endorsement of a document by the end of that assembly meeting.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, will there be a constitutional convention part two, like we need a follow-up meeting or something like that?
Unfortunately, you know, the most important part about these conventions is that you guys are here, because you guys could actually teach, and this could be a real experience for the student assembly to teach others how to write a resolution, what resolutions are all about, making an argument, and talking about these constitutional rights. And so that is the reason it's happening in lieu of a normal student assembly meeting. And so, because of our agenda, I don't want to take up more than one student assembly meeting. Furthermore, if we were to do it for more than one day, say that Friday, unfortunately, that's the weekend before Easter. So I do not really expect that to be a worthwhile, you know, schedule. So I think after the convention, we'll start taking it to the online and to groups and continue to gather input.
And that concludes our discussion. We'll be voting on this, presumably.
Can I make an amendment?
Yeah.
Okay. Motion to amend April X and Y to on April 21st at 4:30 p.m. Or on Thursday. The first be it therefore resolved. On Thursday, April 21st at 4:30 p.m.
Well, not voting on it. Do new business.
I could just resubmit it. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Where else?
All right. Moving on to resolution 72, request for board reporting and giving emails to all faculty.
Thank you.
So, if you want to do something here,
My name is Abby Beck, and I'm a senior.
I am Douglas Grant, and a senior.
All right, you have 4 minutes to introduce your resolution.
All right, so I'm going to turn it over right now to Abby and Doug, and they're going to really quickly talk about the event for a second, and then I'm going to talk about what the point of the resolution is. So if you guys want to just describe the event.
So our event is a faculty forum entitled Academic Rigor and Support for Students, and it's being held next Wednesday, April 6th, from 3 to 4:30 here in the Memorial Room. The event is a panel discussion. It will have students and faculty members there, and it is being moderated by Bill Fry, who's the dean of faculty, as you all know. And Doug is going to talk a little bit about the purpose and why we think it's really important.
Thank you, Abby.
All right, so the forum, basically, it's open to all students and faculty, but we feel that it's very important that we get as many faculty here as possible. That's kind of the point of the email. I'm sure Ronnie will talk about that a little bit more. But the actual forum is called, like we said, Academic Rigor and for Support for Students. We feel too often at this campus, academic rigor by faculty is favored over any sort of support for students. Say that three times fast. And given the tragedies last spring and the move to increase mental health awareness on campus, we feel that some faculty may not be clear about what that means. We want to have faculty here so that they understand that that we can get a discussion going so that they understand that you can have support for students without compromising academic rigor. To that extent, we really want to target specifically professors of large lecture classes, whether or not it's engineering or pre-med or any other large lecture class that's considered competitive, because we feel there's a Darwinistic view amongst faculty at this campus that large lecture classes and intro courses are meant to weed the weak students out, and we feel that there needs to be a culture shift such that it's not really about weeding students out, but really providing support in any way so that the students can complete the curriculum necessary for them to pursue whatever major that they choose. And to that extent, so in order to accomplish that, Roneil suggested the, I guess, the resolution or whatever, I don't know the jargon, he'll talk about it.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess just to preface that really quickly, Vince and Matt and Dan and, you know, and I and among a few others on the assembly have been working on mental health for the last year. I know when me and Vince met with Dean Fry at the beginning of the year, I remember a quote that sticks out is, you know, this is a really pertinent issue that a silent majority of the faculty are just unaware of, and I know Vince has mentioned that line a lot. This is kind of, I guess, an attempt by, you know, a couple of students in premier organizations on campus to kind of end that silent majority and bring light to an issue. I know we've tried to do this a couple of times this year, and it's kind of been a failed attempt to get faculty behind the issue. You know, I met with Bruce Levitt last week, who's the chair of the UPC, and he kind of had the same sentiment where this isn't necessarily something that faculty are opposed to. It's more or less something that you know, for whatever reason, doesn't really register with them as an issue. You know, they assume that you know, they have a classroom full of Ivy League students that can handle the coursework that's being put in front of them. And it's sometimes hard for them to put everything in context as far as what our lives look like out of the classroom, how regulations in the classroom are affecting, you know, our daily lives and how we go about our daily schedules. So this is an attempt, you know, not only the essay, but with students and a couple organizations. If you look at the quarter card, DSU and Minds Matters, and I know Abby's a representative of Haven who's taking part in this as well. So kind of just like a collective effort on campus to tackle this issue. What the resolution is calling for is basically sending an email that I sent to Ray. I don't know why it didn't get attached to the resolution. All it is it lists the date and time of the event, what the purpose is, and has this flyer attached as a JPEG, and requests all faculty to come to the event. You guys all saw the Google Doc that I emailed you earlier today. Basically what that is we want to blast all faculty and request all of them to come, and then at the same time extend personal invitations to, you know, a couple of select faculty that are either members of the coalition of faculty that are willing to help students or represent, you know, those very extreme classes that are kind of the case practices that affect students, whether it be pre-med or engineering or, you know, the things that normally come to mind. So that's pretty much the gist of the resolution, and unless you guys have anything else, we'll take questions.
All right. First of the speakers list is Representative Kerr.
I just want to voice my support for this. I think it's a great thing. I've been talking to a lot of professors, and even professors who have told me that they can't make it because of great initiative. So I really hope that everyone will get the word out to the professors and get as many people here as possible.
Thank you.
All right. Next in the name is Representative Gard. Our acceptance of resolution will be, but my only question is, isn't this more of something we should bring to the faculty assembly? Because I know that we, like the city assembly itself, has had a hard time sending an email out and sending classes to the entire student body. So I think that's something that should more be done by the faculty. And that's only a question I fully support.
So the reason that I didn't decide to push this to the Faculty Senate was because the Faculty Senate meets on the second Wednesday of every month, and this event is happening next Wednesday. So the next FS meeting is going to be after the event. So the way that I saw, you know, most efficient to do this would be to have Vince immediately forward this resolution if it passes to the people that I outlined. I think it's like Dean Fry, Dean Hubble, and President Scorton. All of them have the power to blast all faculty, and, you know, hopefully based on this, one of them does.
All right, next
to the speaker is Representative Hanson. Yeah, I love this. I'm just curious who the faculty on the panel are going to be, so I don't have to ask them.
So we have a lot of faculty involved, but we haven't completely finalized the list of that, so we can update you as soon as we know.
It's just, you know, it's two students, two faculty members, and then Dean or Bill Fry, and we have.
Not yet.
We don't. We've got a list of many faculty, many students that are interested, and we're currently narrowing it down. Sorry.
That's cool. All right.
Any other questions?
Before I go any further, I'm going to go ahead and move some business today. It's next Wednesday. Is there any respect to that? Seeing none, I'm just going to move this now today. Vote on it. Also, another person which I think we can probably send it to, this resolution is the provo, so it doesn't need to be officially added. The resolution will probably be on the action list or be done in any way, so it's all being specifically looking at the provo. So, that can be the list of representatives of the House.
I was going to ask for the business today.
All right. That, as far as the speaker list, call the question.
Second.
Second.
I'll call the question means they want to vote on it. I'll call for application.
So,
like, you know, support.
We are going to go ahead and call the call question in a second. Call for application. Second. Is there any dissent? Saying no dissent, the resolution is 72 is passed by.
Thanks, guys.
So, it would be great if every assembly member could invite two faculty. That is a realistic goal. Take three cards, one for yourself, two, and then two more for faculty, and please invite them tomorrow if you can.
Is it possible for us to get a copy of the email so that we can email certain faculty?
Yeah, we will for you for the email address.
And there's also a Google Doc with who's contacting my faculty, so Bruno and I can send that out. Can you update that, which professors you're contacting, so we don't have the same way?
Yeah, so Moe just asked a question that I hope that people have asked me. If you add a professor to the Google Doc and you have to contact them yourself, there's a column that's the contact inside. If you put your name in there, then we're assuming that you're contacting them. If you click this link, we're assuming that you need one of us to contact them. So you can either list someone that you think should be contacted and we can do it ourselves, or you can list someone that you have a relationship with that you want to contact and we've got to expect you to do. Thank you.
All right, any other questions on the resolution?
Maybe a good idea, even besides a general blast, that all the college representatives do a department for an in-college blast, because then the more, if you go to your, you know.
So, yeah, if you're a college representative, contact your NOIR, we'll need to get things sent out.
Dean Matthews of Community College is helping sponsor the event, so if you're having trouble getting the email out, just let me know, and I can have Dean Matthews email the dean of that college to get it out.
And you give that to the very important. All right, we have one announcement.
retirement by
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.